Blog Talk Radio.
Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
To love
Very, very strange, enchanted boy. They say he wanders very far over many lands and seas. He was very shy, and there was so much sadness in his eyes. But very wise, so wise was he. Then one day he passed my way, and while we stood and spoke of many things, fools and kings, this he said to me: the greatest thing, the greatest thing you'll ever learn is to love and be loved in
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see?
The man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4. I
got something, yo, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing on. Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven ring. Ring with the harmony, oh, liberty. Let our rejoices rise high. Turn in the tide, loud as the orgia. God of our weary years, God of our solitaires, thou who has brought us thus far, oh, along the way, thou who has fired thy mind, keep us forever in the past we pray.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our home ownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week.
Does your insurance company work for you? Hi, this is Ken Robinson, President and CEO of Ken Robinson & Associates Limited. We are an insurance brokerage firm located at 5963 West Madison Street, Chicago, Illinois. Our phone number is 773-626-0883. We make the insurance experience easier by shopping for you, saving you time and money. Our agency features the best insurance products, giving you the most competitive prices. We insure needs for less, featuring life, health, annuities, homeowners, auto, SR22, bond cards, business owners policies, general contractors liability, and vacant buildings. Now, we also offer coverages most major insurance companies no longer offer. Please call for a free quote at 773-626-0883.
Attention business owners, radio show producers, and internet radio producers. It's time to crank it up for 2012 with quality radio production. Are you a record label needing hot album promos or EPKs for your new artist? Introducing CoolVoiceRadio.com. Does your internet...
John was here. After going through, he looked back at that old mule and said, since I can't shout in your church, since I can't dance in your church, oh, my mule, I feel like shouting right now. I come to tell somebody I feel like praising, praising him. Well, well, help me out, y'all. Oh, I that you committed unto him against that day. Now let me hear you say, Jesus.
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 Nobody but Jesus.
Jesus.
Nobody but Jesus.
Jesus.
Let me hear you call it.
Jesus.
Let me hear you call him.
Everybody, the Jimmy Lee Underground Radio Network is back on. We are going to be kicking off Black History Month. It is Black History Month. You all do recognize that. And it's a month I think that we should honor. People say that it's the shortest month that they gave us to us. No, Carter G. Woodson chose it because two prominent black people were born in February, one being Booker T. Washington. So what we're going to do now is play a little snippet of the father of Black History Month, Mr. Carter G. Woodson. Be back in a minute, everybody. Yeah, I mean, when the Carter G. Woodson one.
When you thought you had, slipped through your fingers, turn around and it's gone. It's all the journey. Think about it. Yeah, yeah.
In a time when the strategy of Jim Crowism was to dehumanize and discredit those who were different from what was considered the mainstream of America, Dr. Woodson stood up and subsequently changed the course of history.
Dr. Woodson started the association in 1915 at the height of the ascendancy of the Ku Klux Klan. when lynchings were rampant in the United States of America, when racism was part and parcel of American ideology.
Well, of course, there were the obstacles of bigotry and of racism and of denial. Large numbers of white Americans simply could not believe that African Americans had made anything, that contributions.
Carter G. Woodson was born on December 19, 1875 in Buckingham County, Virginia. He was the son of former slaves James Henry and Eliza Riddle Woodson. He was the youngest of nine children and had to work on the farm rather than attend school.
Let me show you the man who managed to get a PhD from Harvard, only the second man after W.E.B. Du Bois, who was denied his own education and didn't get formal education until he was 20 years old. He was a remarkable human being, an extraordinary intellect.
And so he sought in every way possible to represent African Americans as people who had made enormous, significant contributions to the development of this country.
However, Dr. Woodson was determined to get an education. And at age 17, he moved to Huntington, West Virginia. And at age 20, he was finally able to enter Douglas High School. In less than 2 years, he graduated and went on to enroll at Berea College and also served as principal of his old high school. After earning his degree from Berea College, he then journeyed to the Philippines and taught from 1903 to 1907. While in the Philippines, he took numerous correspondence courses from the University of Chicago, which prepared him for study in Paris at the Sorbonne. Upon returning to the United States, he entered the University of Chicago and earned a bachelor and master's degree in history and Romance languages in 1908. During the time that Dr. Woodson taught at Dunbar High School in Washington, D.C., he became convinced that something needed to be done about the history of African Americans. African Americans were either being ignored or misrepresented, and Carter G. Woodson was not going to allow that to continue. In 1915, the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History was founded. It was created to promote and preserve African American history and culture. He also founded the Journal of Negro History in 1916 as a tool to get information to the masses. He knew that his research would not be widely distributed in a segregated America, so he took care of that himself. In 1917, Dr. Woodson wrote his first book, The Education of the Negro Prior to 1861. This piece is considered his most important contribution. Because of the difficulty he had in publishing his works, Dr. Woodson founded the Associated Publishers in 1921 to publish books and other information about black life and history. He ultimately wrote or co-wrote 22 books, among them The Negro in Our History and The Miseducation of the Negro. In 1926, Dr. Woodson founded what was called the Negro History Week. It was to expand awareness of the contributions of African Americans to our society and to instill pride in the hearts of black men, women, and children, a celebration that has grown into Black History Month and is embraced and celebrated as a part of the American fabric.
He also launched in 1926 Negro History Week, and he hoped that at least for a week, Americans would, of every stripe, Americans of black and white and brown and gray and whatever, would recognize the fact that African Americans were truly Americans, and that this country owed African Americans of great debt for what they had done to make this country what it is today.
Greatest actors.
Never be a white man. I comes and I goes, and that's my business. Farrakhan, don't you all know I've got a charm? Takes a silver bullet to kill Brutus Jones.
He was a world famous singer. He was an intellectual, labor organizer, and civil rights pioneer.
Championing the cause of socialism, which Robeson had accepted the fact that maybe a scientific socialism was in fact the way to go, the way to relieve the oppressed peoples, not only African American, but the oppressed peoples throughout the world, that socialism was the way to go. And the United States and the powers that be in the United States were not ready.
I met my brother the other day. I gave him my right hand. And just as soon as ever my back was turned, he scandalized my name. Now do you call that a brother? No, no. You call that a brother? No, no. Call that a brother? No, no. Scandalized my name. I met my sister the other day. I gave her my right hand. And just as soon as ever my back was turned, she too scandalized my name. Now do you call that a sister? No, no. You call that a sister? No, no. Call that a sister? No, no. Scandalized my name. I met my sister.
Paul Robeson was the son of William Robeson and Maria Louise Bustill. His father was born into slavery in 1845 in Martin County, North Carolina. In 1860, he escaped when he was 15 through the Underground Railroad, went north, and fought for the Union Army in the Civil War. When the battle ended, Paul's father enrolled in Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. After he graduated, he married Maria Louise Bustill in Philadelphia. They moved to Princeton, New Jersey, after Paul's father took the position of pastor of Witherspoon Street Presbyterian Church. Paul was born there April 9, 1898. He was the youngest of five children. His mother was a school teacher.
His father had always taught him that no matter what the price or no matter what the cost, to, in fact, stay strong to your convictions.
Paul developed his vocal talent when he was a boy, singing in his father's church and with the family at home. At Somerville High School, Paul made straight A's. He was a debate champion and starred in football. In 1915, he graduated and passed the statewide test to win a scholarship to Rutgers University. His years at Rutgers were not easy. He excelled against the odds. Paul was the first African American to try out for the varsity football team. The white players tried to kill him. Some teams wouldn't play against Rutgers because they had a black player. Paul stayed strong and hurdled every obstacle that they put in front of him. He was Rutgers' first All-American, selected in 1917 and 1918. For outstanding player at the end position. Paul earned 15 varsity letters in four sports. In his junior year, his father died. Paul was deeply hurt, but he made the loss of his father motivate him even more. Now he was devoted to living his life in the example his father set. Paul's outstanding performance in his studies earned him an admission into the top two honor societies, Phi Beta Kappa and Kappan Skull. He graduated valedictorian in his class in 1919. In his speech to the graduating class, He inspired them to succeed against adversity. We of the younger generation especially must feel a sacred call to that which lies before us. On ourselves alone will depend on the preservation of our liberties and the transmission of them in their integrity to those who come after us. We know that neither institutions nor friends can make a race stand unless it has strength in its own foundation. That races, like individuals, must stand or fall by their own merit. That to fully succeed, they must practice their virtues of self-reliance, self-respect, industry, perseverance, and economy. After graduating, Paul entered Columbia University Law School. His goal then was to be a lawyer to uplift his race. He was an actor in stage productions and was a waiter to earn extra money for school. In 1921, he married Eslanda Cordoza Good. Paul graduated in 1923. The year he finished, black inventor Garrett Morgan won national acclaim for inventing the gas mask and traffic light. Paul got his first job as a law clerk after a long search, writing legal briefs for a major white law firm in New York. One day, he walked out and never returned after a white secretary would not take his dictation. Paul was now unemployed and his future was uncertain.
At the turn of the century, blacks were, in fact, products of the doctrine of separate but equal. In 1896, the Supreme Court decision definitely made it constitutional to, in fact, separate the races.
In 1924, playwright Eugene O'Neill offered him the lead in his play, All God's Chillen Got Wings. O'Neill was impressed by Paul's earlier performances. He was convinced Paul would be a major star. In the play, Paul's marriage to a white woman caused widespread controversy throughout the United States. He was a big hit in this one. Paul's huge success in the play led him to a lead role in O'Neill's next big stage production, The Emperor Jones. And now, Paul was a celebrity. England offered greater opportunities to African-American artists, and Paul took advantage of this. He moved there from 1929 to 1937. During these years, he traveled the world performing on stage, screen, and as concert singer. By now, Paul was a world-famous entertainer.
Daniel, deliver Daniel, did my Lord deliver Daniel, and a horn of every man. He delivered Daniel from the lion's den, Jonah from the belly of a whale, and the Hebrew children from the fiery furnace, and why not every man? Did my Lord deliver Daniel, deliver Daniel, deliver Daniel? Did my Lord deliver Daniel, and why not every man? The moon runs down in a purple stream, the sun refused to shine. Every star did disappear, yes, freedom shall be mine.
In London, Roberson intensely studied world cultures and languages. He mastered 26 languages.
He had always had an affinity or a compassion for East African languages. And in getting and absorbing and really becoming in tune into these East African languages, that he began to really embrace the philosophy of African peoples and look at himself and his connection with Africa and his African ancestry. Remember now, his father was a slave. So he began to really look back and connect himself with the plight of Africans and really realize and become more conscious of his African ancestors.
More studies convinced him American blacks suffered from an inferiority complex from years of oppression. And this is why blacks looked to whites for cues on how to think. He called them cardboard blacks. Wilkerson strongly believed that blacks had to lead their own liberation struggle.
The term that he used was cardboard. If black folks continue to imitate whites, that they become a carbon copy or in some way a cardboard image of white oppressors, and that with doing that, then they lose their own identity. And one of the things that he saw as very dangerous to blacks realizing or being liberated was to never lose your identity. And I think that this helped him in his battle with the United States government, was that he knew who he was. He knew where he came from. His father had endowed in him the qualities and the sense of determination to, in fact, transcend any circumstance that he came in contact with. And he figured that if all black people had the same sense of tenacity, that they would not have any problems.
His first visit to Russia in 1934 exposed him to a new life.
Wilkerson was basically impressed with the socialism in Russia. He had really adopted or embraced the philosophy of scientific socialism, where there was no class structure. He had seen the horrors of a class system in America. When he got to Russia and looked at the socialism of the Soviet Union, he didn't find that. He didn't find discrimination because of color. He didn't find discrimination because of economics. He found more or less opportunity because of your talent. And I think that he adopted this and embraced this philosophy as a way to go for not only African peoples, but as a way to go for African American peoples to, in fact, break the bounds of oppression, have them break that yoke of oppression.
In 1935, it was his belief that blacks had to stop imitating whites or be destroyed by the next generation. Wilkerson's research concluded that black Americans should go to less hostile places like Palestine or Peking to go to school.
I found in Russia a complete absence of race prejudice, a complete absence. The first time in my life, Senator, that I was able to walk the earth with complete dignity as a human being. So I took my boy there. He's now at Cornell.
Yes.
And let me tell you what happened.
What age was he?
He was 8 or 9 years.
At one point, he decided to live permanently in London. But after his exposure to African culture, he believed he had to return home.
As far as Africa was concerned and the plight of Africans, Paul had witnessed the poverty in African nations, and he had witnessed the effects of colonialism on Africa. In London, he had come in contact with Jomo Kenyatta, who was definitely suspected of leading the Mau Mau revolt against the colonial powers. He had also been influenced by Nkrumah and many of the other African leaders. So he had begun to really take stock and embrace the plight of the underprivileged, be it in America or in Africa.
You need an extension of the democratic rights and full citizenship to people who do not yet have them. Negro people, it would include, for example, many of the Spanish-American peers.
When he came back in 1937, Wilkerson organized the African Council in New York City to aid liberation of African people from colonialism. He was chairman. Fed up with playing the stereotypical roles offered by major Hollywood studios, he quit the industry in 1937. He concentrated on singing.
But don't say nothing, he just keeps rolling, he keeps on rolling along. He don't plant taters, he don't plant...
Wilkerson gained international acclaim singing black spirituals and folk songs of many countries in their native languages. At his concerts, Wilkerson told his audience about the human rights struggle around the world.
I'm in the South, My father was a slave. A few weeks ago, I'm standing in North Carolina on the very soil on which my father was a slave. Now then, I go into the whole history of our civilization. 100 million Negroes from Africa torn to pieces and died in the slave trade. On our backs in America, the very primary wealth America built, on our backs, cotton, taken to the New England textile mills. What do we get from it today? Poverty, insult, inferior station in life, no opportunity. Who controls the wealth? A few people.
Before 1945, he was, in fact, the most popular African American in the world. It was just that after 1945, with the Red Scare, with his political affiliations and his political convictions, that he became pretty much bad news for anybody who got close to him.
By 1949, forces in America were moving to stop him. The House Un-American Committee subpoenaed him and other Americans to testify about their communistic affiliation.
Do you know whether or not the American communists believe in world revolutions?
That I don't know.
You don't know that?
That I don't
and,
know.
And do you know whether they do believe in allegiance to the Communist Party or communism in Russia?
Do you know what?
That they owe allegiance to.
Oh, no, I don't think that I would say no from anything I know about it. I don't think they have nearly as much allegiance to Russia as certain Americans seem to have today, say, to a fascist Greece, or to Turkey, or to Abdullah, against Jordan.
You have addressed communist meetings in America, have you?
Roberson continued to talk about the oppression of African Americans.
I would say, to me, the essence of fascism is in two things. Let's take the more obvious one first. Racial superiority. The kind of racial superiority that led a Hitler to wipe out 6 million Jewish people, that can result any day in the lynching of Negro people in the South or other parts of America, the denial of their rights, the constant daily denial to any Negro in America, no matter how important whether it may be, of his essential human dignity, the things which no other American would accept. This daily insult to his dignity as a human being.
Many African Americans would in fact go to Europe, but very few would go to Europe with the kind of convictions that Du Bois and Robeson had, as far as speaking out against the oppression.
His speech at the Paris Peace Conference in 1949 caused a major national controversy. Robeson said, African Americans shouldn't fight in the Korean War until they're free at home. He was criticized by scores of political groups and influential black and white leaders.
A. Philip Randolph was to say that Paul Robeson should not have gotten political, that he should have stayed with principle, that the principle was whether blacks would fight in segregated units, not whether they would fight against communists. That Paul Robeson had made the statement or had alluded to the fact that blacks would not take a stand against communists. When Truman was to send black troops to Korea, that it was quite the contrary, that blacks had in fact done well in the war effort for the United States. But that Robeson said that they wouldn't. And that A. Philip Randolph, Roy Wilkins, and many of the others would contend that Robeson shouldn't have taken a political stand, that he should have accepted the fact that the military was being integrated and that blacks had traditionally been patriotic, and that it was not a question whether they would be patriotic or not. It was a question of whether they should, in fact, fight in segregated units. But when that was abated and with the passing of desegregation of the armed forces, that issue was closed. But Robeson continued to harp on the policy that blacks would not fight for democracy against communists.
The attacks were so brutal, Robeson was sure he'd be killed when he returned to the United States from his European concert tour. Robeson had difficulty getting promoters to book concerts for him. he finally got a promoter for his annual Peekskill concert in Peekskill, New York. Tensions were so high that a huge riot erupted.
I've been threatened with death. I've been threatened with death. People can't stand the denial of liberties forever. You can't stand still, Senator. There are too many people, like the Negro people, who suffer today. We haven't got the perfect democracy, have we? How are we going to achieve it? Other people are trying to achieve it, too. They're achieving by communist, socialist means. Why should we try to rule everything else off the face of the earth? That's all I'm trying to say.
They got comfortable with their status and didn't want to lose that, didn't want to jeopardize that. They didn't want to jeopardize their comfortable homes, their comfortable living accommodations. They did not want to jeopardize that for the masses of the people. They felt that they had gotten theirs and whoever followed them was all right, but that they would not sacrifice what they had achieved for the masses of the people. You know, and we often call these men race men because they are the champions of the race. Everybody was not on the same page as Du Bois and Paul Robeson. The intoxication of capitalism had in fact gotten many people. Many people had become comfortable with gangs and thought bigger gains instead of as the mandate for the Talented Tent was to reach down and pick up somebody else. That they got comfortable with where they were and did not want to jeopardize losing ground in order to carry their brothers.
Why, in the light of the terror that I've seen and the denial of rights, that the lynching bill is not sort of before the Senate at this time? That hasn't come out of the committee.
I think the legacy is that this was the man who was true to his convictions, was a man that believed and acted upon his beliefs, that was in fact a true Renaissance man. He spoke the language of the common people, he walked with kings, but he never lost that common touch.
I've been all over the United States speaking and attempting to speak, and I have been experiencing in our own country today this very thing of control over the people through fear, terrorism, and brutality. This is happening in all parts of this land.
People like him, that many of us walked on the shoulders of these people and are lifted up.
From my experience, like today, so we as America support one section of Greece against the other section of Greece. We intervene in Italian politics on the one side. It always seems to be the fascist side instead of the
other. Well, did you think we were on the wrong side in Italy?
Oh, unquestionably.
Unquestionably. You were on the communist side.
And certainly, in fact, everywhere we are. And we're about to restore German fascism.
Yeah.
These are the torchbearers. These are the trailblazers. These are the people that are classified as Renaissance men. He was ahead of his time as well as Du Bois in coming full circle and reconnecting with their brothers across the Atlantic on the African continent. Many blacks at that time would not and did not feel any sense of brotherhood with Africa.
Too many people, like the Negro people, who suffer today. We haven't got the perfect democracy, have we? How are we going to achieve it? Other people are trying to achieve it, too. They're achieving by communist, socialist means. Why should we try to rule everything else off the face of the earth? That's all I'm trying to say.
Paul Robeson died January 23rd, 1977, in Harlem, New York.
The question of communism, for example, which is brought in every minute.
Mr. Robinson,
can I go on with my question? I'll answer that in just a second.
Are you a member of the
communist? I will answer that in just a moment. Can I go on with my question?
Yes.
I will answer that.
Well, that is the little tribute that we're doing. Well, Black History Month, I had two more sections that I was going to do on Paul Robeson, but I don't want to burn it all the way out. I'm going to just keep it going on for the rest of the month. But let me take a quick break. Be back with you in 1 minute.
For the dollars bound in jail,
hey.
And no money for to go there,
yeah.
So keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, the only thing that we did wrong, the
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes, with no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years.
All this time, I couldn't shake your memory. And I never knew the sweetest love was the first. So what am I supposed to do about this curse? Oh, baby, I've got you to blame. And I'm calling, calling out your name. Oh, he's so gentle.
I can't do it no more. I can't sing no more sad songs. One, two, three, hit me. Bop, bop, bop it out of bebop. Bop, bop, yeah, bass man. Come on up. One, two, three, hit me. Sound good. Yeah. Saxophone on the floor. One, two, three, hit it.
It just scared me. I just can't take it, man. It's just
unhealthy for souls. I decided to take my family away from the television for the halftime show. And then we came back. We missed the kickoff. And dude scored a touchdown. Game was over. The game was over. Game was over when the coin flip went in place and the referee stopped it. That's when the Matrix turned over. You see, ladies and gentlemen out there who watch the football game, if you...
That's true. If you believe in luck and things like that, I agree.
No, it's not luck, Dana. This, let me tell you what happened for real. If you was rooting Denver Broncos in the bizarro world, the Denver Broncos won. But let me tell you what happened after that one. There was a riot in the streets in Denver. It was chaos. Obama calls in state troopers. Martial law got enacted. Somebody got shot on the bridge. It was pandemonium everywhere. So the powers that be that controls everything seen and unseen came down here to clean up that mess, because we talk about nuclear catastrophe out here. We talk about cats and dogs land, fools boxing, and street slop. You know, it was kind of crazy. So order for the war to go at ease, we have to stop it and get transported all the way back to that coin flip. And this time, the referee made sure the coin flip
yeah.
And gave Seattle the ball. And then that decision altered the whole reality of the universe that we're living in right now, because in another world, Denver won it. It was total chaos, Dana, and we couldn't stand it.
Okay, so I'm going to translate that. So I'm going to translate everything you just said.
Okay.
So those who believe they're superstition know that if you step on a crack, you break your mama's back. If a black cat walks in front of you, you're going to have bad luck. If you break a mirror and all those other things. So what happened was, as the coin toss was up in the air, it was going. And guess what? The games were going to be played just like they had been played for the whole Super Bowl. The Broncos were going to be smoking. But in order to jinx them, the ref put his hand out there, right? Out comes the omen. Bad luck for the Broncos. Come on now. Take Manning. Okay. Here's what was amazing for me. And I'm not a big football fan, you know. I love basketball, right? So I'm out there hollering, shoot the three-pointer, and all this other stuff, right?
Right.
But Peyton Manning, according to the people on the news, the announcers, and I may have this wrong, but they said this man had only thrown 4 interceptions, right? Period. Here comes number 5, and here comes almost number 6. So you're right. I agree that the mojo was put on him when that ref stopped the coin toss. He should have let Joe Namath go ahead and throw it down with his fur on. He was out there with his fur, first of all, trying to break all the rules about wearing an animal to the game. But he should have let him do his thing.
I'ma say it again. Retranslate the translation. What have you ever watched? Anybody out there, 12 monkeys, they can understand where I'm coming from.
What happened was
the referee had a butterfly effect, meaning he saw what happened by allowing that coin flip to go through. It's almost, let me see, if anybody ever saw the movie, what's the name of the movie when everybody died on that flight to 214 Ebony?
427 or something like that?
If anybody ever saw Final Destination, they would understand where I'm coming from. Now, before every Final Destination, everybody in that car accident sees the accident and they crashes. And they go through the whole commotion of who died, what, where, and when, how. But just before the accident happens, everybody gets zapped back. Like, y'all saw that, man. And then right before the same thing happens, they all decide to get out the car, get out the plane, get out the whatever, and then what they all saw happened. What I'm telling you is, Wayne, he saw that nobody called it. The coin flip went in the air. He saw him giving the ball to Denver. Then he saw the riots break out in the stands. Then he saw total chaos in Times Square. Then he saw people in Vegas who had money on a coin flip go crazy. Then a whole lot of chaos went all off that Barack Obama had to call in the National Guards. Martial law was in full enacted. Everybody got the chip. Everybody was under control. And there's nothing we can do because the ref let the coin flip toss. He saw that in his eye. He had to quickly grab the coin and say, hold on. There's a mistake here. What mistake? What mistake? No one saw the mistake. But he saw the mistake. He saw the chaos. He saw the carnage. And he didn't want to be responsible for it. So he grabbed the coin out of midair. And let's do this all over again. People, we need a choice in America. Father Starr give a speech. Love your neighbor. Let's not fight amongst the here. He might as well gave that speech. But I'm going to say here, for those people who don't believe what I'm saying, if you saw the game from the beginning, you saw that coin toss. From that point on, you said, uh-oh, something ain't right. But you couldn't put your finger on it. Those are the people who witnessed the carnage but can't remember really what happened because the aliens memory for it. But we knew it had to do with that coin flip. But we can't put our finger on it. So, in the end, to make us all forget about it, Seattle went there and stomped Brent Denver. So now we can talk about the Denver getting stomped and not, hey, man. Wasn't that coin flip funny? So that's what happened. So you can take that to Hollywood and write a movie on that.
I agree. Ooh. I agree that that's what had happened. And I, too, was fooled, especially after that ref stuck his hand out there in slow motion and caught that coin. Right. After that, my whole world was turned upside down. I agree.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. So the coin flip had to be called properly because an improper coin flip would have caused total chaos throughout all of America. I mean, think about all the fights that have been happening that was going on and everybody screaming at Super Bowl parties. People were getting shot, stabbed, mauled, and mutilated. So the ref saw that and realized, hey, I'm not going to go home. Maybe the ref saw somebody getting in for that. Think he was probably in on some fluky stuff, man. So the ref realized, hey, he had his final destination moment. Realized, let me call the coin flip properly. But on the real deal side, America got to see what they paid to see on the first opening drive. You got to see the number going against the number one defense on the opening drive. No one wanted to see an okay offense going against an okay defense on the opening drive, so we got what we wanted to see. The part of it is that on the opening play of the opening drive by the number one offense, they got scared. And that
I
was
agree.
It. And that was it, right there. This is the biggest moment, and you can't even get the ball in your hand. And
but you know what? If I was
player of the year.
What I thought was extremely hot was when they came out there on the white Bronco at the beginning of the game. After that, I knew for sure Denver was about to whoop up.
Well, Dana, like everybody says, moment that Demaryius Thomas caught that ball and he got hit and got knocked 3 yards back, the moment that hit happened, everybody would admit the game was over. Everybody was scared like, oh, my God, they're playing football. Prior to that, Dana, nobody in the whole league, how football was being played this year, was allowed to hit, push, tackle, or none of that. But this is the first time that people – somebody get hit. This is the first time the Denver players felt, oh, damn, they're hitting for real. Oh, we ain't hit like this in a long time.
Well,
so
we're
not getting grabbed the hell or pushed down. They're actually grabbing onto us and hitting us to the ground. I'm hurt. And it's cold out here. Ouch. And they managed to keep Peyton Manning.
If I was Denver, I would have been scared.
Yeah. They
because those boys wasn't no joke. Did you see them playing the game like the last two games that they played here before the Super Bowl? I mean, they was carrying them off the doggone field and on stretchers.
Right.
And they were still acting crazy.
LOD, LOD.
Right. So I would have been scared too. So I do not blame the Broncos for not wanting to get all beat up in just a game. They already got rain.
Well, I'll be honest,
I thought they were going to win.
Well, how about this? It goes to the old saying that, and I'm not being racist with everybody, that the two losses that Denver received the most, lopsided victory or what have you, was against African American quarterbacks. John Elway lost his Super Bowl to Doug Williams, the first black African American quarterback. But people are forgetting that. People are not taking this. People are not saying this today. People are not celebrating the fact that we got a second African-American quarterback winning the Super Bowl this year. No one is talking about that. They're forgetting about that. We had Doug Williams one, and now we got Russell Williams two. So two black quarterbacks winning. And they both won against Denver, against John Elway. Here's John Elway, first time to bring a Super Bowl championship team. And just like when he first went to the Super Bowl, a black guy took him out. But we're not saying that on African American History Month. Here we are celebrating African American History Month, and we got a black quarterback winning, and no one is saying that. But I'm here to say that congratulations, Russell Wilson, for being the second African American quarterback to win a Super Bowl. Being the only quarterback in history not to throw an interception and to be sacked. Which one of the highest?
Yeah, they made like six historical records.
Right,
like
and
they
like
tied the first and the third for the youngest team.
And the first quarterback to have more victories in the first 30 games than anyone in history. Being the first quarterback to have the highest completion rate in NFL. I mean, in Super Bowl history. I mean, let's give it up to the black guy, but
That was their first Super Bowl. The Seattle team hadn't won. Since 1979, and that wasn't the football team, that was the basketball team. So, I mean, they deserved it. They were not playing. I mean, oh, my gosh.
Right.
And prior to that, they had talked more junk than any NFL team in the history of football.
Right. And that's right. And that's why people didn't like them.
Ricky Sherman got played on TV.
I think everyone to get in this combo. Hold on. Oh, y'all have me? Okay. Because I will give you the mic, Evan. You know how you do it. Right, okay. Evan's having a good time because she was enjoying her Super Bowl party that she was at. But like I said, it was a very entertaining Super Bowl for me. If you like defense.
But I got to tell you, one thing that I think helped them win the game is Richard Sherman. Because that man was able to get in everybody's head that he interacted with, he got in their head.
Right. Everybody. And that's why it was a great victory for them and to be so young.
Right.
Now, everybody's going to be looking at them, so it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be very interesting to see how they handle themselves from this point on. You know, are they able to keep everybody together, you know? It's going to be very, 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 very interesting. And I'm looking forward to seeing if they got it.
We'll see if they made it, what they made of again next season.
Yep. That's the whole deal, you know.
But Jimmy, this was an interesting weekend because not only did the Seahawks win the Super Bowl, but I also saw a very interesting article on Facebook.
Where'd it go? What'd it say?
Now I remember before when you, and I wish I could go back to the dates of the show, but you said, hey, if they allow these marriages, then they say, you know, we're going to have people marry animals. And guess what happened?
What happened?
In California, according to this newspaper article I read, this man actually married a dog.
No, I think, wait, you got to be kidding me. You got to be
kidding.
Break it down.
What
was it saying now?
Huh?
What was it saying?
It said that according to there was a law in California. As a matter of fact, if you give me a second, I'll pull it up. That a man, that if the laws change, and I'm going to try to find this law, and I'll tell you where it said, it quoted it in the article, which I thought it was a joke, especially after I saw this man stand up here with a tux on, and the dog sitting up here with a dress draped around his back.
No way.
It said that the law said that if men were allowed to marry men and women were allowed to marry women, then man could marry him. So this man became the first.
The law that now. Say it again. The law. What said the law again? What the law says? What now?
Hold on. I'm going to it right now. I'm pulling it up. I'm going to read you what the article says, which to me was just as crazy as could be, and I really would not have believed it had I not looked it up myself.
What is the law called?
I will tell you in 1 second. But I was so shocked. Okay, so what I did was I did a Google search on California man marries dog.
California man marries dog. Okay.
As a matter of fact, let's see.
When was the article written and where is it coming from?
Now, I read this on a national report. Let's see. Okay, if you Google California man married dog, okay, moment. As a matter of fact, in that article, I mean, it's hilarious. Are you looking it up?
No, I was going on with you. I was rolling what you say. You know,
okay.
I was rolling on with
the... I'll pull up the actual article. It's so interesting because when I Googled it, it came up with like a whole page of the same article. So I'm trying to decide which one to click on.
Oh, so many articles. Well, how about this then? Let me take a quick break. You five.
Okay.
On a quick. Yeah. Here we go from that point on. Here we go. Let's take a break.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Slowly I caress her with my eyes.
Longer, I can wait to get it on. Eye to eye contact, girl, the feeling's way too strong. No disrespect without the text, baby girl, I am gone. Okay, since we are alone in the bedroom of my home, a little Marvin Gaye and Chardonnay. Hey, let's get it on. We are both grown, so there's no need to be playing. This is just a mutual agreement. I'm not trying to be your man, and I'm not trying to take your hand. This is just a one night stand. I understand you are a fan, you might
this starter fire in my pants. Girl, you know what you were doing, seducing me while you dance. This night is almost over, this will be my last chance.
Slowly I caress her with my eye, and I can't wait to put my hands on you. You.
I'm in the street trying to move a bird, but I see you watching me. You like a G, exciting me, yep. Physically inviting me, and I can shoot my rifle straight. Tell me how you like it, babe, and I can make your night today. Put you on a flight today, and we can fuck the night away. Living our life, okay, so you can be my wife today. Playing with yourself on that Skype, make me want the cake. I eat the cake, anime, I beat it till the feeling gone. Fuck it to my music, so that's twice I done killed the song. And the way that thing snatching, you done killed them thongs. And the numbers that I'm betting, I done killed the cone. Hey.
Slowly I caress her with my eye, and I can't wait to put my hands on you. You. Okay. Fire has in her eyes. All I wanna do is make love to you.
All right, then, my bad.
That little dead air.
Okay.
All right.
So some of these things say that it is a fake law.
Yeah, okay.
I'm Googling it.
What state are we talking about
it
now?
It says that it is a fake law in California. That went, the article that went viral, they said that this man married his dog.
Okay. That is a viral article. That means
it's
viral,
a viral article.
Viral like can't be believed.
Exactly. So I have no idea if this is a real article or not. But
okay, but from your
investigation, and the dog a judge jerked over his back, and it is hilarious.
Okay, from your crack investigation, but you notice that there's a law in California that states that, that says that if what now, what were you saying now? What did the law state now?
Well, see, I don't think this law is real.
The law states, what did the fake law say?
The fake law says that the man married his dog, but I don't think it's real. I think
okay,
it's
what did the law say?
I think it's really propaganda, but the funny thing is, according to the bottom of it, I mean, you know how people make the comments on there. They do have some famous people that have made some comments on the bottom of it, too. But
okay.
The fake law says that California
doesn't
recognize a human-animal marriage.
Hold on.
I don't think it's true.
Before, because people are treating animals like humans now. Notice that, though. But before we get to that, I would like to say, before we deal with the man marrying the little feline, the little filly, bitch, for the man marries a little bitch. What I'm getting at is this. What did the fake law say that allows the man to be able to marry his bitch?
I have no idea. This is a fake law. I can't really quote a fake law. Come on now.
See, the underground's not saying that this law is true. We're saying that there's a... If you receive this fake viral law, this letter stating what?
Well, I will be honest with you. When I read the article, I thought it was true. So, of course, I forwarded it around like, oh, my God, can you believe this?
Are we saying that there's an article being passed around here that possibly might not be true? But we need to investigate it more, or upon further review, it is not to be true.
Well, I think it should be investigated more, Because I'm definitely, you know how I am. When I see something, I'm going to take it. And
what
read
is it that we're investigating, though? So I can get my crack staff to go investigate it. Could you at least tell my staff?
Okay, have your crack staff investigate. Have your staff investigate California state law. I'll tell you, Article 155, Paragraph 10.
And what does 155, paragraph 10 say, if you don't mind me asking?
See, if the state in 1850 had a law that said that if a man and a man can get married and a woman can get married, then a human and an animal will have the same right in every law, in every eye of the law.
And so when you looked that law up, was you able
I did
to
not find the law. When I looked it up, I did not find this law, and I don't find it to be true. In fact,
now,
when I Googled the California law, the only thing that came up was this article. Then I saw another article that said that this was a viral article that was not true. It was fake.
Well, I'm glad that you found that out, but have you found anything about the man who's got his case up in polygamy? This one man, 7 wives, 14 kids, and why his marriage be recognized in America?
No, I didn't hear anything about that.
Well, have your crack staff look at that, and then we'll see if we can have that go.
I would definitely have my crack staff look it up.
I saw it on Dateline. I think it was a Dateline or One Inch program. I think his case is going up to say that if you're allowing a woman to get married, then my relationship with my wives should be recognized too. You know, and that's where he's going at it. And he said,
are you saying that the sister wives will eventually really have a husband?
I mean, it goes down like this, that in Utah, they're looking at their wives, they say their marriage has been wholly unjust and illegal. And so then they looked at, by you saying that our marriage is wholly unjust and illegal, we feel the same thing, that we shouldn't be discriminated, just like we should not be discriminated against, just like homosexuals should not be discriminated against. And that's what they say.
When you say we, are you meaning the polygamist? Because I don't know.
The colony of polygamy, the polygamy colony. So polygamy is coming to a theater near you pretty soon, just like medical marijuana. I'm just saying, this is this
well,
Dana,
I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, I
no,
think
what I'm saying is, no, all I'm saying is this. There's nothing wrong with anything.
Deficit.
What I'm saying is, it's funny how we're 14 years in the new century and how ways of the old century are not the ways of this century no longer. Now, we're just 14 years in the new century, and the ways of what I'm speaking of are antiquated ways of how you see them as, but they're old century ways, the last century ideas of what I'm talking about. So people need to see where we're in a whole brand new world. Can't realize that. People still living the lifestyle of the 90s. Now realize it's 2014, the new century. Looking at things with a 21st century mind frame. This is your mind frame.
So do you think, okay, so here's my question to you. What do you think about the crazy weather then?
Well,
do you think that there's a sign that something is going on?
Well, then, see, Dana, you're going to have me go biblical again, because in one book I read, it says in the last days you can't tell the weather whatsoever. You know? So it's all believe what you see and what you read. It's like a coin flip. It could be a coin flip. Coin flip can't be a coin flip.
Exactly.
Depends on what you see, what you believe. You know, I mean, it is wintertime. Did our minds get so used to not having wintertime that wintertime comes back? We don't know what it is no more. So then, that we forgot winter, cold, bite. It's like this. People remember the old song, Over the River, Through the Woods, Grandma, what? Jack. But Jack Frost is nipping at your nose. Well, that should go. How should go? Song go, whatever. But the comment of it, it sounds so cute and so poignant. Jack Frost is nipping at your nose. That's frostbite. That's unpleasant. That's painful. And it may sound so cozy and comfortable.
Right, maybe we gotta get you the frostbite.
Right, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Jack Frost is nipping at your nose. Man, she's painful, man. Help me singing it all smooth stuff to me, but no. Jack Frost is, frostbite is inevitable, and this is wintertime. It's not spring.
Right. I agree that it is wintertime, but I think it's a crazy. I mean,
you forgot
you know,
about
the
winter.
The weather goes from 30 to 57 and then back down to 32. I mean, the snow stops for the Super Bowl. Come on.
Yeah, and then
what,
came on the Super Bowl.
What other state will the snow stop for the Super Bowl?
And then came back in when the Super Bowl was there. See,
right,
like I said, Dana, an alternate universe happened. See, that coin flip went Denver's way. It snowed. I mean, shit had to be changed all around that we have no idea what happened, man. You know?
Now, had the snow not stopped for the Super Bowl, I wouldn't have believed none of it. But anytime the snow stops, Super Bowl comes, the day after the Super Bowl ends, snow comes back.
Hey,
I don't know. I just have not heard of winter taking a vacation to watch
let
football.
Let me ask you, ask this question. I think Peyton Manning feels to lose a football game in front of his brother in his brother's home stadium.
You know what? Okay, so I listened to some of his stats after the game because, honestly, I'm going to tell you, going into the game, I thought the Broncos were about to ride out into the sunset on that white Bronco like they rode into the football stadium. So he still is what did they say, the fifth best quarterback?
Nah, man, he ain't.
In history of football?
I can't see that. No. Listen, no. Wait, no. Listen. Let me give you an example. If it's Joe Montana, would he choke? Nah. Great quarterbacks don't choke when they get on stage. Great quarterbacks lose the game by, like, a field goal. A great quarterback loses the game because they wasn't on the field, and their defense didn't hold the person. You know, like, damn, I put the points up. Defense hold them. It ain't my fault. I did my job. That's how great quarterbacks lose. Great quarterbacks don't go out there and get blown out before the fucking first half is out. You know what I'm saying? Great quarterbacks
but
don't miss.
Was on him, so it wasn't his fault. It was the mojo's fault.
Yes, it was. It was a mojo. That dude was in that pocket throwing his ball with his eyes closed. He was that scared. You would swear, watching that game, you would swear they beat Peyton Manning up. They only touched him one time. You would swear that he was just you would swear he was getting beat. You saw somebody scared.
Yeah, the whole team was scared, if you ask me.
No. I ain't listening because the whole team responded to the quarterback. If your quarterback's scared, then you scared. If your quarterback's cocky, then you cocky. You know, first play of the game.
But see, he
the
could
first
not
play of the
be
game,
more cockier than Richard Sherman. I mean, Richard Sherman walked up to that dude. What are you about to do? Dude was like, I'm about to punch you in the face. He was like, go ahead and do it.
Ah. Well, how about let me get something even smoother. When my man, my homeboy, Donovan McNabb, quote-unquote, choked in the Super Bowl, everybody's laughing at his ass. They say he choked, throwing up, and all scared. This dude choked. Dana, on the very first play of the ball, he know the play is. Let me go change the play. They didn't hear me. Oh, my God, he hiked the ball. You're the quarterback. Go get that ball. You scared.
Okay,
so
in his defense.
But if you know Dan, for the first time he thought about his mortality. For the first time. He lost his edge. You can't play quarterback scared. You can't do it.
Jimmy.
You can't do it.
He said after the game that he heard a noise in the stadium.
Let me tell you something. That was the outdoor stadium, we even a dome stadium. Don't come from. It ain't like the noise is compacted in there on the spot. You know, he might as well blame that shit on the boogie. What happened? It was the boogie. When the sunshine, it wasn't a good time with the boogie. You know what I'm saying? Because then he was scared.
Can you blame him for being scared?
No, a quarterback should never show fear. Once a quarterback shows fear, it's over.
But see, I think that the fear started when they watched those tapes of the Seahawks' last two games. And they watched those guys being carried off on stretches. And I do not blame them. I was scared for them going in.
Dan, let me tell you something. No. It was this. They beat him up so bad that Peyton Manning didn't even have a chance to get on the field in the first half. They kept on the sideline. Like, no, we're not gonna even let you out here. And we, how about this? We're gonna march all the way down here and just score 3 points. Now it's 5-0. What you gonna do? 3 and out. Okay, sit back down. We're gonna take more minutes to come all the way down here and score 3 more points. Now it's 8-0. What you going to do? Come out there, 3 and out again. Okay, we're going to march the ball all the way down again. And score 7 points. Now it's 15-0. You're still in the game, Peyton Manning. You're still in the game. Now how about this, Peyton Manning? You march all the way down there. Fourth down and one. Go for it. You could have took 3 points. Are you going for it? You blew it. And all they did was march down there and score again. That's the game in a nutshell. He didn't take the points we had a chance to. When your team is struggling, you take the points quickly to stop the bleeding. He couldn't stop the bleeding. Now, I go back to that fourth down and one play. Now, people, this is why I go to this fourth down and one play. In Indianapolis, a long time ago, there's a fourth down and one play when Tony Dungy was coaching Peyton Manning. Tony Dungy sent out the field goal unit out there. Peyton Manning shut him down and go back. I got this. That scenario, Peyton Manning won. Now, everybody looked at him as this is Tony, as how he's the coach. What the coach say, do, that's what you do. After that, Tony Dungy got out of coaching. So everybody looked upon that moment as Tony Dungy getting out of coaching, as Peyton Manning dissing him. Now, fast forward to this century, 2014, fourth down and one. Peyton Manning, head coach. And Peyton Manning, he the head coach. He calls the offense. Offense runs through Peyton Manning. Whatever he say it is. He had a bad call. If you're smart, he would have took the points. Played dumb. The black quarterback, on the other hand, he played wise and smart. There was a play when the defense had him pinned deep in the back. Instead of throwing the ball out of control for interception, instead of taking the penalty, instead of taking the sack, he got the ball close enough to throw it to somebody close enough to the ball can be completely incomplete. And then get the ball right back at the point of attack without not even losing no ground. He played a smart game. Every third down, when he scored. They don't want to give him the credit that he should get. He was 18 from 24, 26 like that. He only missed 6 passes, 200-some yards, 2 touchdowns. Those MVP type of numbers. But they couldn't give him to the MVP on the night the right quarterback got trounced. They couldn't do it. But it is Black History Month. And we can see we want to see. We can see race everywhere, but, you know, it is what it is. But tomorrow I'm going to see if I have a show. I don't know if I'm going to show. I might be out canvassing. It is election time. Jim Lee is trying to go to D.C. But, Dana, what you got to say?
Yay! I'm glad it's Black History Month because it's an important time. This is one of my favorite. This is my favorite month of the year other than my birth month. I feel that it is important that we learn about our history because right now things are kind of starting to reverse themselves. So I'm looking forward to learning all the things we got to learn on your show this year. I mean, this month.
Ah, Danny, you're in your compliments. Thank you so much. But it's 5 weeks to the six weeks to the primary here, and then the game.
D.C.
And yeah. Since we buried my grandmother, put her to rest, and now I can get back on my campaign. The 2 weeks that I was in mourning really was good for me. I got my little transition, and I feel good that my grandma's in a better place, you know. Everybody says a better place, but no, you live your life. You live 4 decades. You live 90 years, so she lived a time where he is with the Lord. She was the Most High, passing on your grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and your children around, which is beautiful. We had a great service. Otis Clay came to sing out here. The World Grammy Award winner Otis Clay came to sing. All the Timbs worldwide came out. I appreciate y'all for coming out. But again, this is Jimmy Underground Radio Network. And tomorrow, We'll be doing more Black History Month, and I do love my grandmother, and I'm back on set at action, and I will be back on my campaign. Ebony, we got to send this bio out tonight. And good night, and may your God be with you. And I guess I'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
Lord.
Here we go.
And no money for to go down there.
Yeah.
Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on,
yeah.
Hold on.
See y'all tomorrow, everybody.